Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Now then, you're very welcome back. Tim Vickery, it has been too long.
How you doing, Joe? Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Not much, Tim. Not much, which is why we have you on. Copa America, they've reached the quarterfinals. Two Copas in a row. Just explain this briefly.
What, the fact that we got another one next year?
Yeah,
a bit like waiting for buses. Well, we're moving from odd years to even years. So from now on, the Copa America will be at the same time as the Euros, which I think is perhaps a dubious idea in itself, but perhaps the European clubs will be happy. So CONMEBOL, in traditional fashion, have taken advantage of this switch from odd to even to have one in an odd one and then the next even year. After that, there's not another one due until 2024.
Okay.
So for the moment, we have a glut.
Yeah, it sort of demeans them ever so slightly. I see next year's one is joint hosted by Argentina and Colombia. They don't share a land border.
Next year's one is insane. And this is for political reasons. It's the old story of a camel being a horse designed by a committee. And Argentina desperately needed it because Argentina is the lead in the 2030 World Cup. And after all the shenanigans with the River Plate Boca Juniors Libertadores final in December, when they couldn't stage the game and it went to Madrid, Spain are also in the race to stage 2030, Argentina needs something to kind of wipe the slate clean. But that puts Colombia's nose out of joint because Colombia theoretically would be the next South American nation in line for a World Cup. If the Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, Paraguay 2030 bid is successful, then Colombia are well back in the queue. And Colombia haven't had any tournaments recently. Argentina had the Copa the Copa America in 2011. Yeah. So you put them both together. They're still arguing about which country will have the big games, you know, the semifinals and the final. But what it's going to be next year, we can't have the three group thing. It's going to be two groups next year, one in Argentina, one in Colombia. It's a 6-hour flight between the two capitals. And that will mean next year, because we're still going to have two invited teams. We're going to have Qatar and Australia next year. There will be two groups of six. Mm. So a group stage that will go on forever.
Ever.
And will be even more of a phony war than the group stage is at the moment.
Hey, sounds good. Enjoy that. So we're in Brazil. First time in 30 years, Brazil have hosted a Copa.
That's right,
yeah. Quite surprising.
Well, what they did, when the Copa came back in 1987, it had fallen into disuse. When it came back in 1987, it went round all the various countries, going to some of the countries for the very first time. So Argentina had it in 87, Brazil had it in 89, and then it's followed all the way around. And now, as the average white band once cancelled, let's go around again. So we're on a second circuit.
Okay. Quarterfinals as follows. Brazil, Paraguay, 1:30 Irish time on Friday, if you're up late. Then Messi and friends play Venezuela on Friday, 8:00 Irish time. So that's quite a nice kickoff time. Colombia against Chile. Chile, the defending champions twice over. That's Saturday, midnight Irish time. And then Uruguay with Luis Suarez in fine form against Peru, Saturday, 8:00 Irish time. Just before we get into the football, the ticket situation I saw was quite interesting. There was a good piece in The Guardian. So Brazil obviously hosting this tournament. Brazil-Bolivia in the opening round, only 46,000 fans paid in for the opening game. The capacity in Sao Paulo is 67,000, so about 70%. Full. It's been put down to a few different things, but certainly the price of tickets. So minimum wage, this is in sterling, pays £205 a month, this piece in The Guardian was saying. So £205 a month minimum wage. Brazil's games costing about £100 a month. So your typical fan there seems to be priced out of it, and they're happy to have empty seats.
Yeah, the ticket prices are too expensive. They've priced too many people out. The procedure for collecting your tickets is overly bureaucratic. There were Brazilian games in the Brazilian Championship going on until the day before the tournament kicked off, so that ate into time for marketing. Having said that, if we compare this with previous Copa Americas, the average crowd is pretty good. And it's not as good as it was in the United States 3 years ago. But you're dealing with a different purchasing power then. But if you compare it with Chile 4 years ago, the average crowd in a group phase has been something like 8,000-9,000 more. Mm. The difference is that Chile's stadiums are small, Brazil's stadiums are big. So the smaller crowd, it looks very, very small when you see the size of the arena. There have been some terrific atmospheres, though. I was in the Maracanã in Rio last night for Chile-Uruguay. Mm. And we had 50,000 in there, and it seemed like all of Chile had come down. I don't know if you remember in the 2014 World Cup, Chile fans, they staged an invasion when they went to the Maracanã. They played Spain, and there was this group of ticketless Chile fans that built up in the hours before the game, and they ended up storming the stadium, crashing the barriers and getting in through the press entrance. This time they didn't need to do that. There were enough seats to accommodate all the Chileans. So we had a terrific atmosphere. But no doubt about it, with better pricing and better organisation, we could have more people in the stadiums. Having said that, I've done eight coppers now, every one since 1999. And the ticket situation now and the number of people in the stadium now is so much better than it was then.
Right.
I mean, in 1999 in Paraguay, and this was par for the course in coppers in those days, the games for the hosts were pretty much full. But in lots of the other games, there were more police in the stadium than there were supporters. The continent has got richer. I first noticed this in 2011 in Argentina. Suddenly you saw a travelling army of Colombia fans. And since then, of course, the World Cup. It's almost become a Latin American event, isn't it? You know, I mean, they took over Brazil in 2014, but they took over Russia in 2018 with the Peruvians travelling in mass. And there was even a game. I know Panama is not South America, but it nearly is. It's right on the border. There was a game in the last World Cup, Panama and Belgium, in Europe, and Panama had more supporters in the stadium than Belgium did.
Right. To segue along a similar theme, but onto Brazil in particular, Dani Alves was talking about that poor attendance in Sao Paulo, and he said, well, whenever we come to Sao Paulo, that happens. The people just cannot separate their clubs from the Brazilian national team. And then I saw the head of the Corinthians.
He's referring more there to the boos that the Brazil team
at halftime.
Received.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a tradition in Sao Paulo. And the Sao Paulo crowd are absolutely vicious because they grew up on Pelé. So it's the most impatient Brazil crowd. They played their last game there in Sao Paulo against Peru. And the one way to stop the boos is have the opposition oblige and more or less kick the ball into their own net a couple of times in the first few minutes. And then it just becomes a party and a possession. But these games, when Brazil are at home to heavily gunned, outgunned opponents, they take one of two paths. Either Brazil score early, and it all becomes a party, or the opposition managed to hold out and the pressure then piles on. Brazil becomes anxious, the crowd start booing, and it gets harder and harder to break the deadlock. Now, that, I'm sure, will be the story of Brazil's quarterfinal against Paraguay on Thursday. And Paraguay have qualified for the quarterfinals by dint of losing one game and drawing two. So that shows you how forgiving the Copa America is. They haven't even won a game yet, and here they are in the last eight. Remember, in the quarterfinals, there is no extra time.
Right.
So Paraguay, the task for Paraguay really is to run the clock down. The last two Copa Americas in this format, the 12-team Copa Americas, both times Paraguay eliminated Brazil on penalties. That will be their task, I would imagine, on Thursday. And they could be aided by another theme from this tournament. This game will take place in Porto Alegre in the south. Dodgy pitch.
Okay.
Did you see that miss from Lionel Messi on Sunday against Qatar?
Yeah.
If you watch it in slow motion, you will see the bobble that the ball takes just before it reaches him. Everyone has been complaining about that pitch. So that is an ally for Paraguay as they seek to spoil and run the clock down.
Brazil beat Bolivia 3-0 in that first game. They drew 0-0 with Venezuela. They beat Peru 5-0 in their final game. So that's how they've made their way here. You said at the outset, I was reading your tournament preview, and you said the hosts being without Neymar has caused them some anxiety. But frankly, they might perform better without him. Roberto Firmino, Gabriel Jesus, fresh off their fine seasons for Liverpool and Manchester City respectively, will get the chance to definitively lead the line. So how's it been going?
There's still a problem, I think, and that is that Firmino is not a conventional centre forward, and the structure of the team is so different from the structure in which Firmino flowers at Liverpool, because you know there obviously he's got two very quick, very skillful strikers who will run beyond him in Salah and Mane, but what he hasn't got is a playmaker. Now, Brazil are playing with a playmaker. They're playing with Coutinho as a playmaker. I think, a tendency for Firmino and Felipe Coutinho to operate in the same space, to get in each other's way a little bit. So there are still questions, I think, to be asked about Brazil. They are quick on the break. So when they get their noses in front, watch out. But that first goal, I think that's because there is a lack of penalty area presence. They started off with Richarlison cutting into the box from wide right. He seems to have lost his place in the team without doing a great deal wrong. And Gabriel Jesus is now, instead of playing centre forward, he's cutting in from wide right. Okay. On the left wing, Everton has been perhaps the sensation of the tournament so far, coming off the bench and then starting against Peru. He scored a couple of cracking goals, cutting in onto his right foot. But he can also go left, go outside the fullback. And that obviously puts doubts in the mind of the fullback. There's plenty of talent there, but I still wonder sometimes if they're a little bit lightweight in the penalty area.
Right, okay. And actually, the quote I was going to read to you in conjunction with the Sao Paulo point. So I now see the Sao Paulo thing is a bit different. Those fans are raised in Pelé a bit vicious. But they also, in that Guardian piece, had the head of the Corinthian fan supporter group. And I know it's always easy to get just one person to give a quote like this. So yeah. I'm curious to see if this is true or not. But he was saying of the general tone around support of Brazil, he said, "Today it's no longer a Brazilian national team. With players playing far away from here, identification with the people is difficult." Talks about a select audience who can afford the games. He says, "I haven't been to Brazil games for a long time. Formerly, there was a bond with the Corinthian supporters when Rivelino and Socrates and others represented us in the national team and we went to games." He says, "I identify myself more as a Corinthinho. I'm passionate and I used to cheer for the national team until a few years back." Is that a general sense around this team, that they're all off in Europe and we don't quite identify with them as much, or just a kind of a few choice fans here and there?
It's been the case now for more than 20 years, so this isn't a new thing, development. Right. And you can see it clearly. In 1990, Italia 90, is the first time that the squad is 50-50.
Okay.
Half home-based, half abroad. And ever since, it's been overwhelmingly foreign-based. Overwhelmingly. So this is a long-running thing. Hmm. There is no doubt that I think, especially for two groups of people, this does distance the Brazilian team from the supporters. Those two groups are, number one, older people who grew up watching the best playing for Brazilian clubs, and number two, absolute fanatics for the club, such as the voice that we just heard. For the younger generation, I think this is entirely results-based. For example, the side in 2006 that went to that World Cup, it was hyped to the heavens before with that front four of Ronaldo, Adriano, Kaká and Ronaldinho. All of them played abroad, all of them, as did, in fact, I think pretty much the entire team. But going into that World Cup, there was no lack of identification whatsoever because the side was seen as all conquering and winners. So this issue of a lack of identification, it tends to come up whenever results are disappointing.
Okay.
So because the younger generation have grown up watching them play for Barcelona anyway. Mm. I think that is something that journos of my age tend to bellyache about, perhaps more than fans of your age and younger.
Fair enough. Brazil, Paraguay. Friday, 1:30. I want to segue into Messi and friends in a moment, but I guess something which sort of links them. Neymar injured, I know. Messi over at the Copa. Graham Hunter was in the OTB AM show this morning, and this is kind of fascinating stuff, really. Have a listen. It's about the, what was going to be the Griezmann transfer to Barcelona before it seems Neymar has become their man, and why.
First of all, I understand that the deal between Barcelona and Griezmann was agreed in principle, written and signed in principle over in let me call it out, one of the financial paradises in about March. And the agreement was that come July 1, that they would pay the diminished buyout clause of 120 million euros. That comes down from just over 200 million euros. Why accountancy in current Spanish thinking means that buyout clauses pretty consistently now drop after July 1. Probably it's just power to the agents who say, yeah, we'll sign on, but we want not only a get out, which was over 200 million, but we want a reduced get out in case we're not happy after this first year. It seems to me to be, if I were an Atleti fan, I'd be pretty angry at the way that Atleti have negotiated that clause. However, Barcelona were completely committed to buying Griezmann on July 1st. And they knew the price, they knew the wages. It was a done deal because you don't have to negotiate with a buyout clause. It's not a transfer. You deposit the money with La Liga's offices. And Atleti, or whichever the club that's losing a star, has no word in it. And then what happens here, and this is why Owen and you and I have the good sense not to preside over one of the world's behemoth football clubs, your superstar, Leo Messi, says, I want Neymar back. And when you're the president of a club that still desperately needs Messi, and has come nowhere near the point of saying, I wonder when Messi becomes a diminishing asset, because right now he patently is not. His season has been extraordinary. And even those who point to Barcelona being humiliated at Anfield, Messi was awesomely great that night and nearly carried another 10 men on his shoulders. He has had a brilliant year, a brilliant season. Therefore, Messi is not right now viewed as a declining asset. And Bartomeu said that before his mandate goes out in summer 21, one of his last legacies will be to renew Messi yet again. And therefore, all the power is apparently in the hands of the club's playing leader, Messi, who said to Bartomeu, bring Neymar back. That's my petition. Bring him back.
Yeah, interesting stuff. That was OTBAM this morning with thanks to Avant Card, powered by MasterCard. So Messi runs the show at Barcelona. He certainly runs the show in Argentina as well. I saw you, Tim, at the outset of the tournament make the point that of the 23-man squad, 15 of those have fewer than 15 international caps. So certainly not a lot of experience around Messi. What about quality? How are they looking? I know they struggled early on and only had their first win against Qatar last game of the group.
They're inching it. And that this is what the Copa America is for. And it kicks off a new competitive cycle. The coach is an inexperienced caretaker, Lionel Scaloni. Took over after the World Cup, really because he's cheap, because they had to pay a fortune to get rid of Jorge Sampaoli. And Scaloni came in with an idea of play. Very bold for a caretaker. He said, look at France, how they won the World Cup. Quick transitions. That's the style I like. Vertical, direct football. That's the style I want to implant in Argentina. That's the style Argentina need.
Yeah.
So he played his first few games, two wingers open and trying to get the ball forward very, very quickly. Now, I think he probably enjoyed the fact that Messi was taking a little bit of a breather, because it's not an idea of play that you can have with Messi.
Yeah.
Messi's not a winger. You cannot play Messi with two wingers and a centre forward. That's turning the clock back to 1958. That's an old style 4-2-4. And you certainly can't do that with the defenders that Argentina have. So that was the initial idea, but it didn't fit Messi. It's one of the big errors that a coach can make is to make his idea more important than the players that he has at his disposal.
Mm.
So when Messi came back, it was a friendly against Venezuela, who they now face in the quarterfinal in Madrid in March. And Scaloni realizes that Messi doesn't fit the system. He has to sacrifice one of his wingers, but he doesn't want to. He wants to keep his width. So what does he do? Back three. That way you can have two attacking wing backs and you can have Messi as well. Mm-hmm. It was a disaster because on Argentina's back three, they were marking one. They were marking Rondon. And they couldn't mark him. They couldn't cope with him. They couldn't cope with the pace of Venezuela's wingers. So Argentina took a pounding that day, although Messi played pretty well. So at this point, Scaloni is lost. So he starts off the first game against Colombia with an idea that he knows cannot work. He has Di Maria as one winger. He doesn't have another winger. In the end, he sent out Lo Celso wide right. Now, Lo Celso is a left-footed playmaker, cannot operate as a right winger. And the team against Colombia were a shambles. They didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. They didn't know whether they should be playing long to the wings or short. They were outnumbered through the midfield. It was an absolute disaster, and they were bad defensively. So little by little, Scaloni has had to totally abandon his initial idea, and he now has a side that are looking to play their way through the middle. You are seeing improvements. You are seeing a circuit now of passing. Depaul, who's right-footed, operates to the right of Messi. Lo Celso, who's left-footed, operates to the left of Messi. And they can put some passes together. They've got Aguero into the team. How he's ever out of the team, I never understand. But they still have the problem with the defence. They still have they don't have a goalkeeper who can kick. And there is a lack of pace and perhaps quality in the back four. And the goal that they conceded against Paraguay in midweek, Miguel Almirón of Newcastle, faster running with the ball than the Argentine defenders are running without it.
Okay.
And that means that this game against Venezuela is really, really interesting because, bizarrely enough, I mean, 20 years ago, this is, you know, just a case of how many Venezuela are going to concede. That was the only question. Now you look at this one, and it may be the most even of the four quarterfinals.
Okay.
Because Venezuela certainly have the means of hurting Argentina. It's going to be a terrific game. I can't wait for that one.
Okay, good. Friday, 8 o'clock Irish time. Before we go, then Uruguay are through. They play Peru on Saturday at 8, and Chile, the defending champions, are through as well. They play Colombia on Saturday midnight. They played at the Maracanã last night. You were saying you were at that game. Uruguay 1-0 winners. Cavani with a late header. Luis Suarez is kind of capturing the attention over here for two moments of caricature, really. Claiming the goalkeeper had handballed and then realising he was the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think he was appealing for a corner.
Was he?
I think so. Yeah,
well,
I think
he's trying to shoehorn him. Let's not let a truth get in the way of a good story here, Tim. We're trying to sell things here. I'm thinking that he thought handball and then realised, oh, because he saw the line. But I think he might be right on balance. The other beauty was a pitch invasion came on and one of the Chile players helped the security guys get him and tripped him, and Suarez wanted this guy booked. I mean, can you put, like, I was honestly thinking, is there any sanction here for the player? I don't know what the rules are.
Apparently there is. I was sitting next to a Uruguayan journalist who got very angry about it and was showing me the rule book, saying that he may even get suspended because you're not supposed to mistreat spectators. The identity of the perpetrator is interesting here.
Okay.
It's Gonzalo Jara, you know, who played in England for a while, the defender.
Yeah.
Now, what this game was all about last night, Gonzalo Jara, 4 years ago in the Copa, Chile against Uruguay, Gonzalo Jara managed to get Cavani sent off. Cavani absolutely lost his head and he got sent off. And the images showed exactly why Cavani had lost his head, because Gonzalo Jara had inserted his finger, Joe Malloy, into that part of Cavani's anatomy where the sun don't shine.
When we say inserted the finger, I mean...
Yeah, he did. He put it right in there. Gonzalo Jara was recalled for this game. He hadn't been part of the Chile side in the first two games. Now, we had 50,000 Chileans in the stadium. And when the team is read out, the biggest cheer, it doesn't go to one of the big stars. It goes to Gonzalo Jara. I suspect it had less to do with his footballing abilities and more to do with what he did to Cavani 4 years ago.
Dear.
So that's why there's some bad feeling with Gonzalo Jara. And really the theme of the game last night was Cavani's revenge, because he headed the winning goal.
Okay. Fascinating as ever. Uncomfortable at times, Tim. So who's going to win? How's all this shaping up?
Well, it's a bizarre organisation, because we could, in the semi-final, it's possible that we could have a repeat of games that we've already seen in the group phase.
Ah.
It's possible that we get Brazil and Venezuela, and it's possible to get Uruguay and Chile. And quite why they haven't crossed over, Lord only knows. I can't understand why this is happening. I think Brazil are pretty much bolted on to reach the final. I can't see any of the three sides in their half of the group, Paraguay, Venezuela or Argentina, stopping them. Although... I would love to see a Brazil-Argentina semi-final with Messi. Or bring that one on. But I just can't see Brazil being stopped. The other half of the group is perhaps more interesting, because Colombia have looked very dangerous and Uruguay are dangerous as well. I can't see either Chile or Peru doing it. And Chile remind me a little bit of Muhammad Ali in his later fights. And if you look at it, it looks vaguely the same. Mm. And there's occasionally the footballing equivalent of the Ali shuffle, but they ain't got it no more. They can't do it for the duration anymore. It's an old side trying to play a young man's game, and they're going more cautious because of that. You never know. It might be enough to get them through, but I would be surprised. So at the moment, it's shaping up, I would have thought, to be a final between Brazil and either Colombia or Uruguay.
Okay.
And my money would still be on the hosts, I think.
Okay. Listen, as ever, your broadcasting talent leaves us all in the shade. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you. Speak soon.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.